When Twitter was created 10 years ago, few would have thought it would soon come to define a presidency. Donald Trump's use of those 140 characters to lambast opponents, announce policy, and reach over the heads of the press to communicate directly with his 20 million followers has become a signature of his victory, and most probably his time in office. Twitter and Trump, they are inseparable. I'm Catty Kay. Later this week, I'll be anchoring the BBC's coverage of the president's inauguration here in Washington. Now, we're going to examine the extraordinary impact of Donald Trump's tweets. They are read in this documentary by an actor.
I win an election easily. A great movement is verified, and crooked opponents try to belittle our victory with fake news. A sorry state.
Yeah, he speaks the way American people want him to speak. Yeah, I mean, you get his thoughts. Yeah, I love that. Yep.
Meryl Streep, one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood. Doesn't know me, but attacked me last night at the Golden Globes. She's a Hillary flunky who lost big.
When he's talking to you directly, whether it's on YouTube or Twitter or at a rally like this, you're getting it right from his mouth and you're getting the tone and you know what he's saying and why. I like it.
Hopefully, all supporters and those who want to make America great again will go to D.C. on January 20th. It will be a great show.
If he hasn't stopped since the election, he's not going to stop after the inauguration.
Since Donald Trump was elected, the world has found out that if President-elect Trump has something to say, he does it in just 140 characters. He held no press conferences from July last year until the second week in January. So it has been through his Twitter feed that he's provided his own commentary, first on his campaign, then on his win, next on his transition, and now, as he approaches it, on the inauguration this week. Last Wednesday, he gave his first press conference in months. It was a sensational 3D, hyper-real version of his Twitter feed, with all the themes, obsessions, emotions, and promises that he usually condenses into a tweet. Here is Donald Trump himself.
And I think it's a disgrace. I think it's an absolute disgrace. As far as hacking, I think it was Russia. Well, if Putin likes Donald Trump, I consider that an asset, not a liability. When you want to move your plant to Mexico or some other place, and you want to fire all of your workers from Michigan and Ohio and all these places that I won, it's not going to happen that way anymore.
In an interview with The Washington Post this week, Donald Trump has said he will use Twitter to help push his policies through. Susan Glasser is a veteran Washington politics watcher. She's the former editor of the U.S. political website Politico, having stepped down after the election. And I met her to explore how Donald Trump uses Twitter.
So I don't take the most dire view that this is unpresidential. It's terrible. Now, that being said, the ways in which Donald Trump has used Twitter during his presidential campaign go far beyond the unorthodox to the outright problematic, it seems to me.
Let's talk about the media and the media's role in promoting Trump's tweets. Because it's not just that Trump tweets. Every tweet he makes pretty much then gets replayed endlessly on cable television, thus magnifying its force.
Mm-hmm. Trump is very, very skilled at this. And if nothing else, he would be a great media maestro himself if he had not ended up surprising himself and the rest of us by winning the White House. And this amplification effect is real. And especially because he's very gifted at figuring out what presses our buttons and, you know, what's going to be an ongoing controversy and how to jump right into the middle of a news cycle with his own tweet that might change the story if it's a bad one for him.
And by tweeting in the middle of the night, he also succeeds in setting the morning's agenda.
Absolutely.
We all wake up thinking, what's happened overnight? What do we have to report on this morning?
Absolutely. So it's basically like he is running the Trump News Network in addition to the fact that he's running the Trump presidential administration.
What's remarkable about this Trump News Network is that it's not just politics, it's personal. In an interview this week with the Times newspaper, he said he now has access to 46 million people through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The tweeting, I thought I'd do less of it, but I'm covered so dishonestly by the press that I can put it out on Twitter, I can go bing, 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 and they put it out as soon as I tweet it out. So when a major story breaks about Trump, we know from his Twitter reaction how strongly he feels about it. It's a window into his psyche.
Fake news. A total political witch hunt.
This in response to the publication of an unsubstantiated document alleging Russia has compromising information on him.
Russia has never tried to use leverage over me. I have nothing to do with Russia. No deals, no loans, no nothing.
Trump's tweets offer his side of an ongoing story about Russian involvement in the US election itself. America's intelligence agencies have delivered reports, and Donald Trump has turned to Twitter to offer his own reaction, challenging those who suggest the Russians wanted him to win.
Intelligence agencies should never allow this fake news to leak into the public. One last shot at me. Are we living in Nazi Germany?
To his supporters, like New York City Councilman Joe Borelli, this direct access to the way Donald Trump is thinking is useful.
Yeah, he certainly communicates through Twitter. And I mean, it's sort of a funny thing to think about how over the course of the campaign, you know, there was just this assumption from folks in the media, whether they be journalists or pundits or whoever, saying that when he's president, he won't be doing this sort of thing, or he can't be doing this sort of thing. And yet here he is as president-elect, and there's no sign of his Twitter feed drying up. And by all indications, he's going to continue using Twitter as a primary means of communication.
Having a good relationship with Russia is a good thing, not a bad thing.
It could be argued that foreign relations are not necessarily good or bad. They fall on a more complex spectrum, but not on Twitter.
When I am president, Russia will respect us far more than they do now, and both countries will perhaps work together to solve some of the many great and pressing problems and issues of the world.
And just in case that's getting a bit broad brush, here's how he feels about Russia's leader, V. Putin. As Trump's tweet puts it.
V. Putin, I always knew he was very smart.
Can foreign affairs safely be conducted by 140 character exchanges? I asked Michael Hayden, former director of both the National Security Agency and the Central Intelligence Agency.
From your position as somebody who was head of the CIA, imagine for a moment that you were still head of the CIA. What would you advise Donald Trump to do with his Twitter account?
That's easy. Get rid of it. You know, we had a small version of this with President Obama. You know, he ran his campaign from his BlackBerry. And as he's in the transition, we actually went to him and said, oh, Mr. President-elect, you just can't do that. With regard to President Trump, I guess he has a right to do that. He wants a legitimate need to communicate to the people. So I would offer him a caution, all right? You know, it's one thing for Don Trump to criticize somebody. It's quite another thing for the President of the United States.
The United States must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability until such time as the world comes to its senses regarding nukes.
The nuclear question was one raised during the campaign by Hillary Clinton.
A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons.
Because Twitter is so simple and short, there isn't much room for nuance, right?
No, that would have been my second point. Number one, you realize how powerful you are now. You need to be careful because the effects of what you tweet are far beyond what you anticipate. The second is you're the president of the United States. The problems of the world aren't simple. And to think that you can characterize your view of any problem in 140 characters, you're misinformed. And I think I would warn him that you might cause more confusion than clarity over the longer term.
North Korea just announced it is in the final stages of developing a nuclear weapon capable of reaching parts of the U.S. It won't happen.
Comedians have joked about two thin-skinned leaders with bad haircuts both having their fingers on the nuclear trigger. But provoking North Korea can have unexpected consequences. As the screenwriter Dan Sterling explained to me, he wrote the film The Interview about North Korea and...
Well, my observation when I wrote comedic and satirical things about North Korea is that they didn't appreciate it very much, or at least the leader of that country didn't seem to like it much. The movie that we made depicted the leader being murdered in a very gruesome way. I don't know if Kim Jong-un is so sensitive that he might... start firing missiles off the coast based on tweets from Donald Trump. But I wouldn't at this point assume that Twitter does not have the power. That is to say, I think Twitter is very powerful.
So a 140-character tweet could have very real foreign policy and national security implications, you think, possibly when it comes to North Korea?
Be hard for me to believe that one tweet itself could really move the DEFCON number, but certainly a series of signals, a few, you know, very provocative tweets, I think would be enough to very materially escalate tensions.
For many in America, Donald Trump's win on election night was unanticipated. The polls had suggested Hillary Clinton would win, so the outcome surprised a lot of people, but not all. Bill Mitchell is described as Donald Trump's biggest defender on Twitter. He developed a Twitter account questioning the way the polls were being interpreted.
Mitchell, I'm best known in social media for my Twitter feed, @MitchellVII. I started this Twitter feed back when Donald Trump first walked down the escalator. I think I had 140 followers. And as of today, I believe I've got 165,000 followers. I was the guy that got the polling right. You know, everybody else was saying, oh, Hillary's going to run away with this. She's up 10, 12 points. And I was looking at the internals of the polls. I'm like, no, these top line numbers are completely wrong. And Trump's going to win.
So how important does Bill Mitchell think Trump's tweets were in winning the election?
People gave Trump a hard time for his Twitter feed because he says some things that maybe didn't sound as slick and polished as you'd expect from a politician at this level. Okay. But on the other hand, what that did is actually gained him points for honesty and realism with the voters that did really turn out in big numbers for them this time. The people that didn't turn out for Romney were the white, middle-class, blue-collar voters.
Through Twitter, Donald Trump connected with the voters who would carry key states for him, like Pennsylvania. In late 2016, he embarked on a thank you tour, returning to places where he had held big rallies, such as Hershey, Pennsylvania, to address enthusiastic crowds.
I'm here today for one main reason, to say thank you to the incredible people of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
He's a very active tweeter, that's for sure. He conveys messages, whatever's on his mind, and it's really amazing to see a president that actually speaks from the heart, that speaks the truth.
Well, I think he's more authentic than anything we normally see on stage or anything that exists in D.C.
He is willing to work and put in the time and the effort and really do the things that he says he's going to do. And it gives everybody, I think, a sense of believing that he is going to make America great again.
When he's talking to you directly, whether it's on YouTube or Twitter or at a rally like this, you're getting it right from his mouth and you're getting the tone and you know what he's saying and why. I like it. You know, I absolutely like it.
It is these people in key industrial states where he promised to bring back jobs that Mr. Trump has in mind when he tweets about companies that have set up operations outside the U.S., and those companies have quickly learned to take heed because company share prices may fall if Donald Trump criticizes the business on Twitter.
Toyota Motor said we'll build new plant in Mexico to build Corolla cars for U.S. No way. Build plant in U.S. or pay big border tax.
For Trump supporter Joe Borelli, this public naming and shaming is all positive for American workers.
We heard him talk specifically about the Ford plant being closed in Michigan back in September. We heard him talk about trying to cut spending. We heard him talk about trying to keep jobs in America. And over the past couple of weeks, we see him make good on all of those promises with this Ford announcement, with Carrier announcement.
And thank you to Ford for scrapping a new plant in Mexico and creating 700 new jobs in U.S. This is just the beginning. More to follow.
He's someone who is willing to go beyond the traditional roles of the president if it benefits American workers and the American economy.
Boeing is building a brand new 747 Air Force One for future presidents, but costs are out of control, more than $4 billion. Cancel order.
Barbara Perry is the director of presidential studies at the University of Virginia Miller Center. She says in some ways, Mr. Trump's use of Twitter is simply a modern extension of the way previous presidents have mastered communications media.
I think that every president since mass media came on the scene, and it's a 20th century phenomenon, really, Every president wants to control media. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want to control the message that goes out to the public and to the vast public via mass media? Franklin Roosevelt, a fairly new medium of radio on the scene when he's elected in 1932, takes office in 1933, and people know him for his fireside chats on the radio. Next person in line for the next medium to come along, John F. Kennedy. Television, of course. The first president to do live press conferences on television, and he was the master of that medium.
But is there anything new, do you think, Barbara, in Donald Trump's Twitter stream?
I do, and it's a very key difference that when we talk about FDR and JFK using the media or a particular medium, they were using a medium and an outlet that was controlled by other people. The difference with social media is that it turns everyone into a member of that medium, not just an elite who run that medium, not trained journalists. That's the major change here.
Kelly McBride is a vice president of the Poynter Institute and a media ethicist. She describes how Donald Trump uses Twitter.
People underestimate the strategy because he uses a pretty low language level. He uses lots of adjectives like very, 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 and bad, and good, and small words. And so I think people think that because the language that he's using is base, that it's an impulsive, bombastic reflex. But I think the language is part of the strategy. When there are several things that the media could be examining about the president-elect and his ethics or his transition, that's exactly when he will throw something out there out of left field.
Perhaps one of the most remarkable and revealing moments of the campaign concerns the way Donald Trump used Twitter against the television presenter Megyn Kelly, a Fox News anchor who's since joined NBC. She was one of the moderators of a Republican primary debate and fell foul of Mr. Trump. I interviewed her at a public reading for her best-selling book, Settle for More.
And he insisted that I call him that Monday before the Thursday presidential debate. So I called him, and it did not go well. I never want to see that kind of story on your show again. I said, Mr. Trump, you don't control the editorial on the Kelly file. And that is when he blew and started screaming at me. You're a disgrace. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You're a disgrace. I almost unleashed my beautiful Twitter account against you, and I still may.
You were really put under a lot of pressure.
When Donald Trump comes after you, it isn't just a tweet. It's like, oh, wow, he's tweeting about her. And I understand he's a fighter, and he really is a fighter, and he's a counterpuncher. I get all that. But even then, he had such power that a single tweet could unleash hell in somebody's life. Really, I've been under armed guard for 16 months, and my children have been under armed guard. And it's not an appropriate price to pay for hard-hitting journalism.
Perhaps it is inevitable that political discourse changes as a result of social media. Here's what a Donald Trump supporter makes of the social media debate. Bill Mitchell.
In our politics, in American politics, and I use this as a rule in Twitter, the more, when I say something, the more freaked out the left is by it, the more I know I'm over the target. You know, if you're not taking flack, you're not over the target. I must be over the target. So that was a good way for me saying, and then I would just pound that thing all that hard. It's like, yeah, you know, they're worried about me talking about this. Let's talk about this some more.
Bill could be describing how Trump himself uses social media, apparently instinctively hitting back at anyone who criticizes him. For instance, the comedy show Saturday Night Live regularly featured an impersonation of Trump by Alex Baldwin. Trump took to Twitter to provide his review.
One-sided, biased, not funny at all.
And when his vice president, Mike Pence, was addressed by the cast of the Broadway smash musical Hamilton,
"The cast and producers of Hamilton, which I hear is highly overrated, should immediately apologize to Mike Pence for their terrible behavior."
It's a long way from the days of The West Wing. And one of the writers, Eli Atty, says if that program were to be revived, he could imagine how Twitter might be introduced.
I was thinking about that, actually, this morning. And I was actually out with some of the West Wing actors and writers last night, coincidentally. And, you know, the sort of cliche of the West Wing is everybody scurrying around really quickly through these narrow hallways. And, you know, I could just sort of imagine a scene, you know, the day Twitter was introduced where, you know, a slapstick scene where all our characters are just bumping into walls and bumping into each other because they're all looking down, first of all. That would be the first problem.
But Eli also takes a more serious view of Donald Trump in the White House with Twitter.
There's always half a day when he claims or he begins to not use Twitter or to use it in a more restrained way. And then suddenly he's lecturing the cast of a Broadway show about the meaning of theater. And that's the problem, is that, you know, Donald Trump is many things and has many qualities, good and bad. But he's not that knowledgeable. He just isn't. He sort of plucks things off TV and reads things about himself, and then he tweets about them in a sort of a twisted rage. So to have a president who alone in bed at 4 a.m. can tweet about something that can rattle markets and nobody knows he's doing it until it's done, it's a nightmare scenario.
The fact that Eli finds it such a nightmare would probably be one of the reasons why Bill Mitchell likes Mr. Trump's Twitter style so much.
And, you know, here's the thing, is that new media is taking over. Old media, CNN, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC, all this, they've lost so much credibility. I think only 17% of the people trust them. So the media has become largely irrelevant because they've lied to us for so long. So there's an opportunity for new media, citizen journalism like what I do, where it's grassroots and people can get to know me as a friend and trust me and listen to what I say. And Twitter does that. And this is one of the things that Donald Trump realizes, he could reach out to the grassroots and talk directly to people.
There's also a case that the language Donald Trump uses works for his target audience. Kelly McBride.
I'm actually looking through his Twitter feed right now to find an example. What did he say about Vanity Fair?
Has anyone looked at the really poor numbers of Vanity Fair? Way down, big trouble, dead.
Way down, big trouble, dead. No details, very little sophistication, basic dismissal without any evidence or facts behind it. I mean, it's almost like bar talk, right? Like the kind of conversation that people would have sitting at a tailgate. Oh, that's so stupid. You know, this is dumb. There's no way. That magazine is dead.
In this context, Twitter provides Mr. Trump with his own instant commentary. Here he is on the ratings for Arnold Schwarzenegger, his replacement as host of The Apprentice.
Wow, the ratings are in. And Arnold Schwarzenegger got swamped or destroyed by comparison with the ratings machine, DJT.
DJT, Donald J. Trump. That's the president-elect, just to remember.
So much for being a movie star. But that was season one compared with season 14. Now compare him to my season one. But who cares? He supported Kasich and Hillary.
Dan Sterling says these tweets tell us about Trump's mood, and the mood seems to be good.
I think that he is having a ball. I think he is having the time of his life. You know, Twitter for him is the same thing as Twitter for anybody else. It's a chemical addiction of sorts.
Okay, as a writer, analyzing his tweets, reading his tweets, do you think that Twitter is an X-ray in the sense that the public is getting a real picture of who Donald Trump is, his obsessions, his insecurities, his likes, his dislikes, through reading his Twitter feed?
I think it is absolutely an X-ray. I think it is a completely accurate portrayal of who he is. He is unfiltered. I think that one can assume that all the things he says, he is saying either because he believes them, or you can tell when he's saying them because he's feeling insecure or threatened, or every emotion that he goes through during the day or during the week, his Twitter feed seems to reflect it.
Joe Borelli.
This might be the new norm, and as many people in traditional media might not want to admit that or want to see that happen, this is probably the way that the president-elect's going to conduct himself throughout his presidency. And I think it was on the cover of Time magazine that just said, deal with it. And I think we're all going to have to deal with it. Some of us, like me, are going to be encouraged by it. Others, like out there, Democrats, people in traditional media outlets, are going to have to just suck it up.
And we will make America great again. Thank you. Thank you, Pennsylvania.
After a dramatic election campaign and with the start of what looks like being a roller coaster ride of a presidency, I'm still confused about Donald Trump and Twitter. Is this the new policy tool? One thing is for sure, Donald Trump communicates more directly with his followers than his predecessors. And just because the media finds that uncomfortable, does that mean it is a bad thing? The next 4 years will tell us, and that is a lot of potential Donald Trump tweets.
Happy New Year to all, including my many enemies and those who fought me and lost so badly, they just don't know what to do. We had a great news conference at Trump Tower today. A couple of fake news were there, but the people truly get what's going on.
You've been listening to Trump, tweet by tweet. Trump's tweets were read by actor James Quinn. I'm Catty Kay, and the producer was Phil Revell.
James Clapper called me yesterday to denounce the false and fictitious report that was illegally circulated. Made up, phony facts, too bad.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.